Mr. Punch presents The Military Gazette. A foray into British military history in two parts. Compiled by Sue Rodwell and directed by John Tuckey. Part 2, The Army.
January the 1st, 1941. Decided to try and keep a diary this year. I wish I had started before, as the past year has been the best and most successful of my life. I started flying last August. Some of my friends are dead, but many of my other brother pupils will last this war out. Perhaps, if I should one day fall, this diary will be of some slight interest to those who will in the future become pilots, and many will do so. Or it perhaps will stir a chord in the minds of those I once knew as keen and eager to fly, and who were fearful lest they fall down under the CFI's test or some other nightmare test of their flying ability. Snowing today, but got in some formation this morning with MacArthur and Gordon Brettel. Neville Duke. Thursday, 2nd of January, 1941. Very much a clamp this morning. More snow on the way, I'm afraid. Not a hope of flying this morning. However, the weather lifted in the afternoon, and I got up with F.O. Chapel for a height test. Climbed to 15,000, did a few spins, and aerobatted down to ground level. Half rolls, barrel rolls, also rolls. Aileron turns, stall turns, upward rolls. Some fun indeed. Did a forced landing and a precautionary. It was simply glorious up this afternoon. The sun shining on the snow-covered ground and not a bump in the air. It's good to be alive and flying. Neville Duke.
Julius Caesar, 54 BC. Caesar advanced into the Cassivellaunus country to the River Thames. It has only one ford, a difficult one. On arriving, he saw the enemy posted in strength on the opposite bank. Sharp stakes were fixed in front to fortify it, and there were others underwater, hidden by the stream, as he learned from prisoner of war and escaper reports. Caesar sent the cavalry forward and ordered the foot to follow directly behind. But the advance was so rapid and enthusiastic, although the water was up to the men's necks, that the enemy could not hold the legions, and their cavalry quitted the banks and turned tail. Cassivellaunus pinned no hope on battle and had released most of his forces except for some 4,000 charioteers. His method was to observe our route and retire a little from the line of march using impenetrable hides and woods. Along our proposed route, he used to force the livestock and peasantry from the fields into the woods. And when our cavalry ranged the fields to plunder and ravage better, he would dispatch charioteers by tracks and paths out of the woods with which he was familiar to engage our horse, giving them real cause for alarm. This hazard limited their range and resulted in Caesar prohibiting distant patrols from the column and only allowing punitive...
Tacitus, 61 AD. Prastagas, king of the Iceni, was remarkably rich, and he made the emperor co-heir with his two daughters in the hope that this would preserve his home and kingdom from wrong. The opposite happened, for officers plundered his kingdom, and their minions plundered his home as if it were a prize. They scourged his queen, Boudica. They dishonoured his daughters. As if they had been given the whole district, they disinherited the Icenian chiefs and treated the royal family as slaves. This disgrace and fear of worse with degradation to provincial status drove them to arms, and the Trinobantes were stirred to revolt. Any others whose spirits were unbroken by slavery made a secret conspiracy to recover liberty. But they bitterly hated the retired soldiers who had come to the colony at Colchester and driven them out of their homes and lands, calling them captives and slaves, with the active support of the soldiers who sympathised with their circumstances and enjoyed the prospect of plunder. For no apparent reason, the statue of victory at Colchester fell backwards as if it